From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The role of money in our electoral system is well symbolized by the fact that we have a billionaire in the White House and two billionaires among the top Democratic candidates vying to run against him. The moneyed Democrats, Mike Bloomberg and Tom Steyer, have both funded their own races themselves. Because why not? They do not need to rely on voter support because they have a nearly limitless supply of campaign cash at their disposal. Add to that how billionaires are funding so-called super PACs, and we see a significant skewing of the electoral process. My guest is Brendan Quinn. He is the Outreach and Social Media Manager with the Center for Responsive Politics, which runs the website opensecrets.org. Welcome to the program, Brendan.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So opensecrets.org has been a very important resource for people to simply, just ordinary people, journalists like myself, to go and see who is getting what kind of money and from where. It is unfortunately the kind of transparency that is something that the government itself doesn't require. The information is out there, but I know that you distill it. Tell me first how you have seen this year's elections different from previous elections, just in terms of the money that's flowing.
Sure. First of all, I do want to clarify that all of the information that is available on our site is taken from government sources. Most of our campaign finance data does come from the Federal Election Commission. It's just in much harder to read formats than we have available on our website. So the biggest takeaway that I can say is present in the 2020 election that differs it from previous election cycles is the sheer amount of money being spent right now. At this point, we have already seen the most expensive Democratic primary in history, and we haven't even gotten to most of the states voting yet. So that's one of the biggest takeaways. And two of the big reasons for that is, one, you've already said these billionaires, Tom Steyer and Michael Bloomberg, who are spending hundreds of millions of dollars on their own campaigns. But even without them, if we factor out the money that those two men have spent on their own campaigns, this is still the most expensive Democratic primary in history, not just to this point, but in history. And the number two reason for that is the sheer number of candidates that are still in the race.
So a billion, just, you know, because most of us don't think about money in terms of $1 billion is $1,000 million, right? So we're talking about if Mike Bloomberg is worth $60 billion and he spends, say, $500 million of his own money, that's just $500 million, a tiny fraction of how much money he has. And yes, already he has spent something to that effect, but so has Tom Steyer. Two of the top six Democratic candidates are spending on the order of hundreds of millions of dollars of money that they have not gotten from campaign contributions. They've just gotten from their own pockets.
Yeah, Tom Steyer has spent a bit over $200 million of his own money. And based on the most recent figures I've seen, Mike Bloomberg has spent over $500 million of his own money. And he's not taking any money from people. Tom Steyer was soliciting $1 contributions in the earlier part of the campaign so that he'd be able to qualify for the debate stage. But only a very small fraction, less than 1% of his funds, has come from individuals giving small contributions.
Tom Steyer and Mike Bloomberg are interesting as well in that they have not just funded their own campaigns, but they've also just been giving to political action committees, right?
Yeah, actually, they are Steyer's number one and Bloomberg's number three in terms of, we just did a study this week, in terms of the top mega donors giving to outside groups so far this cycle. So they're not only spending money on their own campaigns, but they're also spending money on outside groups like super PACs.
Tell us, for the layperson, what a super PAC is, because it's a term that's used a lot in the media, but rarely we stop to define it.
Yeah, so super PACs stands for political action committees. Super PACs have been around for about 10 years. And what they can do is they can take unlimited funds from individuals, from corporations, from nonprofit groups. They are required to disclose their donors, but sometimes they take money from nonprofit groups that don't disclose their donors. And they can spend unlimited funds on what is called independent expenditures. So while they cannot directly coordinate with a campaign, they can spend as much money as they want on ads that are either promoting a candidate or disparaging another candidate or some mix of the two. And there are a few that are what we'd call a single candidate super PAC. So there's something like Unite the Country, which has spent more money than any other super PAC, at least so far in this election cycle. And that's backing Joe Biden. There's Persist PAC, which is backing Elizabeth Warren. And each of the remaining Democrats actually has at least one super PAC or one outside group supporting them. But they are not allowed to coordinate with a candidate, but they can make these independent expenditures on their behalf.
Now, there's been, by the way, Common Cause has filed a complaint against Bernie Sanders' campaign and its supposed coordination with a group called Our Revolution that Sanders helped to form. But they're using this definition of a super PAC to describe Our Revolution, which seems a little strange given that it's quite unlike most super PACs. They're not getting massive donations from billionaires.
And they also don't reveal their donors. They are not formed as a super PAC.
Right.
And we would not consider them a super PAC for those two, mostly the reason that they don't disclose their donors. They're not formed as a super PAC.
So the you mentioned Persist PAC, which is Warren's, which is the PAC that supports Warren's candidacy. I should be clear in saying that. This is one that was in the news just recently, where it turned out that this PAC was formed so late in the game that, and they're pouring money into the elections, $9 million in television and digital ads. It was just formed on Thursday, so late that by the time its deadline to reveal its donors comes about, the majority of races will have been over. This seems a bit of a loophole they're operating in.
Actually, both Persist PAC and Kitchen Table Conversations PAC, which is supporting Amy Klobuchar, formed at such a late moment in the campaign cycle that they will not have to disclose their donors until March 20th, I believe, which is long after Super Tuesday, long after Nevada, which is the caucus that they were formed just before, and after a number of other states are also voting. It's a little bit of a loophole. They just kind of hit the timing at the right time that they will not have to disclose their donors yet.
Well, that's convenient. Why are super PACs not good for democracy?
I don't think I'd say that they are not good for democracy. The only thing that we advocate for at the Center for Responsive Politics is transparency. And super PACs, even though sometimes they form like Persist PAC and Kitchen Table Conversations too late to disclose their donors during a primary process, in the end, they are disclosing all their donors and we are able to see who is funding them. So I don't think, at least from our perspective, it would be fair to say that super PACs are harmful to democracy.
Are they transparent enough? Are the rules strong enough?
For the most part, yes, because they are required to disclose who is giving them money. The biggest problem that comes with super PACs is that they are able to take unlimited funds from nonprofit groups who sometimes do not disclose their donors. And that is where the biggest concern for us lies, is that, well, they do have to reveal the name on the check that comes to them. The organization behind that check is sometimes not the most reputable organization.
The Intercept recently had an article by journalist Li Fong that was titled DNC Superdelegate Promoting Brokered Convention is a Significant GOP Donor and Healthcare Lobbyist. The critical part of this article that I thought was very revealing was that this person said, I'm a committed Democrat, but as a lobbyist, there are times when I need to have access to both sides. And the way to get access quite often is to make campaign contributions. This is a person who is who's named William Owen. He runs a lobbying firm. I was shocked at how openly he talked about access to campaigns through contributions.
There are a number of people who do speak that openly about what they want to get out of their campaign contributions. For a lot of people, it is the ticket that gets them into an event that allows them to speak to a candidate that is otherwise not very accessible.
And that's exactly the point of the critique around the role of money in elections, right? In a democracy, voters are supposed to be the ones picking our candidates. But when you have so much money flowing in and when donors are openly saying that they use those donations to get access, they are able to skew the process. Then suddenly it isn't about one vote, one person, one vote. It's about one person and $1 billion.
Well, when you think about it, the kind of donations he's talking about are capped in this cycle. This is adjusted every cycle for inflation, but they're capped this cycle at $2,800. So it's kind of hard to argue that one person's $2,800 contribution is making that huge of a difference to a candidate in a race that is raising tens of millions of dollars.
But if you have a billionaire who's making the maximum amount of donation, it's still sending a strong sign to a candidate. Wouldn't you argue that they represent an interest that needs to be paid attention to? It's very different from an ordinary person scrounging together the maximum amount of money who may not be able to do that again.
I'd say that's true, but they're not able to do that again regardless. So everyone still has the same maximum cap and the amount that they're allowed to contribute. I'd say that this is an argument for why it's good to have transparency on groups like Super PACs, because we're able to see who that billionaire giving tens of millions of dollars is. And we can hold people who are supported by the groups that these billionaires are funding accountable if they are voting in a way that suggests that that billionaire's contribution has influenced their votes.
Would you say it's a useful tool for voters who worry about the influence of Wall Street, say, on our elections, to be able to look at these donations and use that as information for how to choose their candidates? If you're someone who believes that Wall Street should have strong say, then you go for the candidate that Wall Street is backing. And if you believe otherwise, you go for the candidate that Wall Street's not backing.
Absolutely. And that's why we exist. That's why we've existed for 37 years and hopefully will continue to exist for decades to come. We provide that service to people, and we break contributions down not just by employer, but by industry. So you can look at the securities and investment industry, which is our term for Wall Street and associated companies, that if that's something that you want to back, if what they're backing is the kind of candidate that you want to support, you can find that information on our site. Or if the candidate that they're backing is someone you don't want to support, you can find that information on our site.
Now, it's been just a few weeks ago, we marked the 10th anniversary of the Citizens United Supreme Court ruling that raised a lot of fears that both corporations and wealthy individuals would be opening the floodgates to campaign finances. What role do corporations play in this year's elections?
So actually, we in the past decade since Citizens United, we have actually seen that people who were very afraid and saying that corporations were going to have a huge, huge influence, those fears didn't really come to pass. The biggest thing that we've seen come to pass is the rise of mega donors. We've seen the top 10 individuals give so much more money than anyone else. And it's these individual mega donors like Sheldon and Miriam Adelson or on the right, or people like Tom Steyer and Mike Bloomberg on the left, who are able to give tens of millions of dollars each election cycle to these super PACs that have really been wielding the most influence. So it's been less the influence of corporations, because we are able to see who's contributing to these super PACs. We're not seeing huge checks coming from corporations to the effect that we are seeing huge checks coming from extremely wealthy individuals.
So like the term super PACs, another term that's bandied about around money in elections are dark money groups. What are dark money groups?
So dark money groups are, we define dark money groups as organizations that spend money to influence a voter where the original source of that money is unknown. So this is mostly going to be applied to 501c groups. That's the designation from the IRS. 501c4s, 5s, and 6s. 501c5s and 6s are respectively where most unions and then business groups fall. And then 501c4s is really what we see as the biggest source of dark money because it's such a vague designation. It's the designation of social welfare groups. So in this group, we see a bunch of organizations like the NRA, Planned Parenthood, and the Sierra Club that have very easily to tell defined purposes beyond political spending. But we're also seeing a number of other groups that have very vague patriotic sounding names that we're not really necessarily able to tell what else they're spending on other than political purposes. And the rule that is governing all of these 501c groups is that they're not allowed to spend more than 50% of their funds on political activities. So that's where the biggest source of our concern falls.
Brandon, where does the money primarily get spent? There's a gusher of money in this election. We know that, of course, it takes money for campaigns when they're directly contributed to campaigns. The campaigns use that to hire staff and to open offices and to, reimburse volunteers. But isn't a huge amount of the money just spent on advertising, which goes to media outlets?
We're seeing tons and tons of money being spent on political advertisements. One stature I saw this week, actually, is that Mike Bloomberg has already spent more on advertising at this point in the cycle, before the end of February, than President Obama has spent in the entirety of the 2012 election cycle. So this cycle is seeing unprecedented ad spending, and probably will continue to see that as the election continues.
I mean, between Steyer and Bloomberg, they could be saving corporate-sponsored media and journalism with the amount of money that they've poured in. And it's just really interesting to see, whether those will actually have an impact on voters' perceptions. But what about Super PAC money? Do we know where the majority of it gets spent? They're not supposed to coordinate directly with campaigns, and they don't give money directly to campaigns. So presumably, the majority goes into advertising as well?
Like campaigns, they also have staffs that they're funding, people right. that are making their ads and managing those people, and they have to, rent event spaces for themselves, and they also have fundraising costs the same way that campaigns do. But in the end, they are primarily to run independent expenditures to either promote or disparage candidates. So they are spending a lot of their money on media. And one interesting way that we've found to look into, they are not allowed to coordinate with campaigns, but to see if there's any overlap going on there is see if they're spending money on the same advertisers. So that's something you can do. You're looking at expenditures data. And a helpful thing about super PACs is that they, unlike campaigns, which have to disclose all of their fundraising and spending, on a regular basis, super PACs do it on a rolling basis as they are spending the money. So that information is more regularly updated, and we're able to see it not in real time, but a lot closer to real time than the spending from campaigns.
Now, I asked you about super PACs and I asked you about dark money groups. Center for Responsive Politics, your organization, points out that dark money groups are steering millions into super PACs. Tell me a little bit about this.
So as I said before, super PACs are allowed to collect money from individuals, corporations, and then nonprofit groups, which is, as I said before again, where a lot of that dark money comes from. So this leads us to what we've kind of coined the term as gray money groups, which super PACs are maybe partially funded by individuals and corporations, and we can see where that money comes from, and then also partially funded by groups that do not disclose their donors. And this is where a little bit of the concern in terms of unknown influence comes into super PACs, is where they are disclosing where their funds come from, but where their funds come from is a nonprofit group that does not disclose
Its funds come from. This may sound a little of an exaggeration, but it almost sounds like sanctioned money laundering, right? I mean, if you have a group that doesn't have to disclose its donors, and then it goes and makes a contribution, a lump sum to a group that does have to disclose its donors, it's an effective way for people to hide the money they're giving.
We prefer to call it dark money alchemy, but yes,
money laundering, dark money alchemy, yeah.
Something that has taken a little bit of the clarity away from super PACs and made not every super PAC, but a number of super PACs a little bit more opaque when they are receiving 20, 50, sometimes 100% of their funds from groups that are then not disclosing their donors. Because on the surface, it seems like super PACs are transparent. And a good number of them are, and we're able to see where all of their funds come from. But then there are a growing number that are funded, if not partially, entirely by groups that don't disclose their donors.
So we've talked mostly about the Democratic candidates, but we also know that the candidate that has raised the most money among Democrats is Bernie Sanders, and he's done it through very small donations. And then out raising him from contributions is the Republican likely nominee Donald Trump, who has raised huge amounts of money from donations, both big and small.
Right? Yes. So there are two major reasons for that. One is that President Trump made the very unusual step of filing for re-election the night he was inaugurated.
The night he was inaugurated?
Yes. Yes. The last two presidents who ran for re-election didn't do it. They didn't file for re-election until the spring of the year before their re-election. So President Obama filed for re-election in the spring of 2011. President George W. Bush filed for re-election in the spring of 2003. So he has had much more time than either of them, and again, obviously, any of the Democratic field, to raise money. And he is also benefiting from being really the only choice for Republicans. There are a couple of Republicans that are challenging him for the nomination, but nowhere near on the level of competition that the Democrats have. So most Republican donors who want to give to a presidential candidate are giving to him, whereas the Democratic field is much more split.
Wow. Well, I want to thank you so much, Brendan, for joining us today. Give out. So openseekers.org is the best place for voters who want to find out who's donating to whom.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can follow us on Twitter or Facebook as well.
That's openseekers.org. Thank you so much for joining us today, Brendan.
Thank you for having me.
My guest is Brendan Quinn, Outreach and Social Media Manager with the Center for Responsive Politics. We've been discussing the role of money in this year's elections. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.